7:34 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I am Kat Brooks. And we are joined this morning by Indigenous freedom fighter Kanahus Emanuel. On May 29th, 2018, the Canadian government announced that it would nationalize the Trans Mountain Pipeline to assure the expansion of a pipeline would be built, putting up $4.5 billion Canadian dollars to acquire the pipeline and other assets. From the Texas-based energy giant Kinder Morgan, some of you may remember the Kinder Morgan name as the same company at the center of the Standing Rock protests in North Dakota. Our guest, Kanahus Emanuel, was a central figure in both resistance movements. Good morning, Kanahus.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. So give us background on the pipelines, the territory.
The Trans Mountain Pipeline is a proposed pipeline right now, or not proposed, but it hasn't been built. There's an old existing 1953 pipeline. This was built in 1953 without the consent of our people. It's a 1,000-kilometer pipeline. This is what will be twinned. There will be another pipeline they want to build that will be completely parallel all the way down from the Edmonton Terminal, Alberta tar sands, through the Edmonton Terminal all the way down into the coast, which would cross 500 kilometers of our territory.
And this is unceded territory.
This is unceded territory. Everything west of the Rockies has never been treated. So we've never signed treaty with the colonial governments, not Great Britain, not Canada, not BC. There's no land agreement with any colonial governments for our territory. And Canada, as a baby country, has been here for 150 years, and we've been fighting for all this time for recognition of our title to our lands, actual land title, and our rights to our territory. Secwepemc territory is 180,000 square kilometers, so it's a massive amount of land base. And the Secwepemc Ulugh, the land of the Secwepemc people, refers to the land of the spilling waters. So we have glaciers, we have, you know, that continue to feed these rivers and creeks that flow all the way down to the ocean, that make up our salmon spawning grounds. The salmon is one of the most important animals and proteins for our people. It's sustained us since the beginning of time. And now our salmon is at risk by not only this pipeline, but all forms of resource extraction. And our people are standing up. And right now we are building tiny houses to stop and put in the path of the Trans Mountain Pipeline to protect and defend our lands, but also assert our rights, our land rights, and our title to the land.
I want to get more into the various ways in which you all are resisting, but I want to go back to 1953 and the original pipeline that was built. And at that time, it was illegal at that time for Indigenous people to hire lawyers, etc. Can you talk a little bit about that history?
Yes, from 1927 to 1951, it was illegal for Indigenous people to hire lawyers to bring attention or to challenge this unceded land question, this land. They end up calling it the BC land question, and this the unceded title issue. And we couldn't gather in more than three people. So like if I was gathering like this, talking to my land, I could be arrested.
Gang injunction.
Yeah. So you couldn't talk about your land and that the colonial government stole our land and we're trying to, you know, fight for our land back. And that was just a short time ago. So that was like my grandfather's generation, you know, and he became a freedom fighter as well. You know, it's a long line of freedom fighters in our family. It's just not me. And I decided to stand up against the pipeline. No, we've been fighting for our land rights in the country of Canada and the world. And my grandfather helped co-found organizations like the World Council of Indigenous People, knowing that everywhere around the world, every city, every place in this continent, we're dealing with oppression, we're dealing with forms of genocide that are impacting us as Indigenous people. And here too, now, you know, Indigenous and African people. And we're dealing with it systemically through every form of government and policy and everything. And we know that as Indigenous people. And we've been educating our people. My grandfather was an educator. My father was an educator. He wrote two books, Reconciliation Manifesto and Unsettling Canada, to talk about this. We tell every Canadian, if you want to start, you know, challenging us, read these two books because you're going to understand. And it's a lot of education to put out there. And my father's passed on now. And
for
the last 2 years, we've been honoring, you know, his stand that we're going to stop this pipeline and this pipeline will never be built. And it's a strong crew of us, but we're also sisters, and my mother is right there on the front line right now. You know, all my family is there, because in order for us to win, we're going to have to work in our family systems in our Indigenous communities, because that's the way we traditionally governed ourselves. So it's not just organizing, coming together, and just a bunch of ragtag organizers or organizations. These are like structures that we've had in place for thousands, like since the beginning of time. How we organize, our mother is the headswoman. You know, we don't have a hereditary chief. She is that, the headswoman, who's the, it's a matrilineal way of thinking. Not that she is like the queen and she is a say all. No, she listens to all of her children. She listens to the concerns. She cares about people. So her decisions is always for the best interest of our people. And it's never about backing away. It's always about standing up and fighting back.
So let's talk about the ways in which you all have been standing up and fighting back. I want to get a little deeper into the tiny homes movement. Where was the idea birthed from, and how has it played out?
Well, we the Tiny House Warriors, it was like a group of women from the Suquamish Women Warrior Society coming together, knowing we need to fight back, but knowing that in previous struggles, land struggles, we've ended up face down with cuffs on. We ended up getting jail time. We end up, you know, facing off with the colonial state is not nice in Canada. Indigenous people face the brunt of all statistics, but when we as land defenders stand up, it leads us in jail. And we didn't want that. It was leading us with court injunctions that were giving enforcement order for RCMP to physically remove us off the land. And we had to be creative, because as mothers, we didn't want to end up in jail again, but we knew we wanted to stop this pipeline. And we were artists as well. And we were like, let's build tiny houses in Standing Rock. They built that tiny house for me and my children in like 4 days. And so we thought it was a really fast solution to house our front line. And in order to get our mothers and our families on the front line, we needed to make it not more than just a camp life, because that's a real rough life. We wanted to have tiny houses, and we wanted to have houses, but tiny houses, there's a big movement of people that are already sort of along the same lines as we, in downsizing, not having such a big imprint on the life. You're living small, energy consumption, like all the things that we wanted to promote as we're fighting against the oil and gas and the fossil fuel industry, is alternative living. And it's something that we've already been involved in our communities. We built a cordwood house at one of our land fights, and that was ended up bulldozed down by the Canadian government. And we built straw bale houses and, you know, cabins and underground pit houses. So our family was already building alternative housing, and tiny house was just adding to that. And it was like, we wanted to be mobile, because we know that the Canadian government has been using injunctions, and we call injunctions just a Canada's legal billy club, because it just like gets us back down to the reserve and into that off of the territory. And we wanted to be mobile, and we built them on wheels. So we have tiny houses on wheels, and we could move, and we could fight the 500 kilometers of this pipeline that's on our land.
So you just keep putting the tiny houses on the pathway of the pipeline?
Yeah. Well, right now we have tiny houses, and we're blocking, since construction is just threatening to start now, we stopped the construction of a man camp. And this man camp would house 1,000 construction workers for the pipeline to lay the pipes and build the pipes. But these man camps are linked to increased violence against women and just everything that comes along with these man camps that start being dubbed the oil rigging culture. And so, you know, drugs, alcohol, sex trafficking, everything that would flood just all 100% male-based population. And even including statistics on like the increase in sexual transmitted infections and diseases that increase in these communities. It's just dangerous. And our women are disappearing at incredible rates. And there's tens of thousands of women, murdered or missing Indigenous women around all throughout Canada. But we're just an hour off of Highway 16, which is called the Highway of Tears, where there's been hundreds of Indigenous girls that have went missing on Highway 16, which goes all the way from the coast and I believe Terrace or Prince Rupert all the way out to Edmonton. And so the highway that we're on and the highway that the Trans Mountain Pipeline follows is the Highway 5, which is the Yellowhead Highway that has a big history as well as women that have been murdered and disappeared.
Speaking of Kana Hus Manuel, she is a member of the Sequimmo and the Tenacha Nations of the South Central Interior of what's called British Columbia, fighting the Trans Mountain Pipeline, currently approved to cross their land, but not yet under construction. I'm curious, you have this long track record with the pipeline that was built in 1953. What kind of environmental effects have you seen from having that move through your land?
Well, this is an old pipeline, so we've been monitoring this line. We've been moved tiny houses into Blue River, which is more in the northern part of our territory, but it's along the Trans Mountain line. And we've been monitoring. They've been doing integrity digs, but they've also been giving signs because they leave their security right on the highway so we can know exactly where they're working. And we caught them and oil spills already that are being documented. There's oil spills all along the whole line, and there's no place that has been excused from these oil spills. They're one across 1,000 creeks and rivers. They had wooden debris, wrecked one of the pipes that are actually going under the river, so it's been exposed. And this is just 5 kilometers south of where we are, and it's a lot of logistics to keep track of a 1,000-kilometer pipeline, and we want to be able to monitor the whole line. We want they've actually started construction now in around the Burnaby Mountain area for the pipeline, and they want to drill through that whole entire mountain or under that whole entire mountain. And this is like in a residential area. We come from a very remote area, and the salmon is the biggest concern. And there's been spills where people don't even know how to handle it. And even in the city of Vancouver, where it could be monitored, there's no one monitoring this whole line. So in Vancouver, in Burnaby, there was a spill where the workers actually turned up the pressure and it went coming and spewing out even more and farther. And so there's people that are not even capable of looking after the emergency needs of this pipeline. And that's our concern, because these pumping stations, and there's around 13 pumping stations along the line from Edmonton to Westridge Marine Terminal in Vancouver, and they're isolated. They're so isolated. So-called British Columbia is the size of Washington, Oregon, and California combined. And it's the 2/3 of the population is around in and around Vancouver. So it's very sparse and unpopulated. And if you look at the population of Canada, there's more people in California than all of Canada. So it is really isolated, and that allows companies to do what they want, because there's no monitor and there's no enforcement either, even on the government's hand. What happened in our territory in 2014 was one of the world's largest mine tailings disasters that dumped hundreds of millions of gallons of toxic mine waste into one of our freshwater lakes, creeks and lakes. This lake is the deepest glacier-fed lake in the whole entire world, and it's just beautiful and pristine, and it dumped all of this in. No fines, no charges. The government actually gives a reopening permit and now gives a discharge permit that we continue to fight with no care about Indigenous people, saying no, we don't consent to this project. And now this company, Imperial Metals, is applying to the government for a permit to discharge these wastes into the lake forever. And they don't meet the drinking water guidelines, and they don't meet the aquatic life guidelines. They have to actually depend on a 30-meter buffer zone that they call a dilution zone, and then do the tests. And that's completely to the government standards, but not ours. Our standards are very high. And so even, I'm saying this because there's going to be a pipeline spill, and the government is going to cover it up, just like they did the world's largest mine tailings disaster. They covered it with sawdust and saw chips. And I monitored the whole thing. I had to break through security gates just to get back to monitor, to bring some mainstream media back there to actually show the war zone that I saw, and that was the destruction of the land at such a massive amount that into spawning, salmon spawning creeks with no care. And so I know what's going to happen with the Trans Mountain Pipeline. There will be spills, and we hear this from Indigenous communities all along the existing pipelines, Indigenous communities impacted in Oklahoma, where there's just sacrifice zones of refineries upon refineries, where every day they have to they sweep their steps, there's black soot on their animals coming down from the downfall from these refineries. And that's what they want here. They want a Phillips 66 bitumen refinery here, you know, and they want to apply for a permit to change it into a bitumen refinery to accommodate this Trans Mountain line, 890,000 barrels per day, coming from the Alberta tar sands, and that is the most, the biggest Alberta tar sands mine in all of their history, just got approval, and that's Teck Mine and Teck Resources. They are applying for permits now for the largest mine that will fuel this 890,000 barrels per day, and they're looking for investments, and they're looking for financiers. And they're looking for insurance companies.
And that's another way that you have been resisting. You wrote a report on economics and trade asserting that Kinder Morgan has been lying to financiers and also working to prevent the pipeline from being insured. Where have you had success? Where have you not?
Well, Indigenous people have been going to Europe and talking to international banks and international insurance companies for years. The Indigenous people from the Alberta tar sands that have been targeting the banks and insurance companies. Also, my father has went to talk to insurance companies and banks, and also to Standard & Poor's about the credit rating of Canada and other countries. This all ties directly together. Insurance companies, they actually finance a lot of these massive projects because they're the ones with everybody's money, and they're investing in a lot of this extractive industries. And we went to Europe, but we brought together a risk assessment. And what we said was that when these companies put themselves up on the stock market and they're looking for investors, they have to have a prospectus, and they have to give the risks to their investors. They have to cite the risk and list the risks. What we're saying is that they don't properly understand how complex Indigenous title and rights issue is in the country of Canada, and especially in so-called British Columbia, where there's been no treaty. And explain legally the risks, you know, and then economically their risks of, you know, investing in something that's so volatile right now, you know, with this indigenous resistance happening. And to say that, you know, a lot of the times they said that they pulled out and they stopped construction. Kinder Morgan sold the company because they couldn't ensure that the construction could go through. It was because of the resistance. But they always want to say it's the environmentalists, and they want to water down that. No, there's some very deep, legitimate concerns over title and actual ownership of land. And that's the uncertainty that we're bringing to this trade between, and these, you know, investments between Canada and other parts of the world and Europe, and targeting Europe specifically because those are our colonizers right over mm-hmm. there. They're the ones that have colonized and continue to commit genocide. And they need to understand that their ties are here, their hands are red too, you know, with our blood. And it's been successful because these bankers and financiers have to meet with us. You know, so there's no choice. They have to meet, and that we're forcing them to meet with us and being able to educate them so they really know that their investment is risky, and to get these risk assessments to the risk management firms and people who are actually telling to the investors, like, actually, this is risky. Don't believe in what the company is saying, because we got these other reports, and these are from legitimate PhD economists and law scholars and legal scholars in Canada. And that's what we're pulling together, is, you know, all the top Indigenous legal, political, you know, freedom fighter activists all across Canada, because it's we're building movement against this pipeline, but it's also for our whole Indigenous resistance across Canada. We're building the forces because we have an international case against Canada. You know, they've been violating our human rights. They've been committing genocide, and we want to take this international because we're being held hostage in Canada. Our legal, our rights will never be recognized in Canada.
This is not just an issue about your land, but about the planet's climate. People who look at climate change look at any project that makes it easier to exploit the tar sands is like lighting the fuse on a climate bomb because of how emissions intensive that source of oil is. What kind of like international support have you gotten from climate circles? Who are your allies?
Our first allies is the all of life, all of the animals and all of the food and all of the air and the water. That's our first most powerful allies. That's who we connect with, because by connecting with the power of those, that life, then we're unstoppable. We'll do whatever that we can for this life. And Indigenous peoples from around the world that are first and foremost impacted by climate change. It's because our food and our water is being impacted, and we're so directly connected to our land and our water through food. Like I said, salmon and berries are our medicines that we still pick today and use all the time. And when those are impacted, we could lose a whole season of berries because of climate change. Because when they were budding and growing, then a cold snap and it could kill everything. So we've seen things like that happen. And we're seeing right now the salmon going deeper into the rivers. These rivers that have been kept cold through the glaciers all this time now are increasing like 1 degree, 2 degrees, and the salmon are going deeper. So we can't even fish them. They're going so deep.
You dip net.
Yeah. And so those are some of the impacts. And we want to really connect with everybody, but we also don't want to water down our movements, because we're standing with Indigenous people, that this is our whole continent. You know, it's powerful. We have actual legitimate title and rights to our land. We have human rights to self-determination within our territories, which means we can govern ourselves, we can say no to projects, we can choose who we want to be leadership for us. Like, there's certain rights, international rights, that we have we have to assert. No one's going to give them to us. And that's going back to our ways and the decolonization. But we come from an area impacted by the tar sands. I just came from there. It's like an 8-hour, 10-hour drive from where we are at Blue River, stopping man camps, to ground zero at the Alberta tar sands. And the community is fighting back. Right now, Tech Mine is, you could only fly into that site where they want that Tech Mine. And there's three Indigenous grandmothers that are saying, like, we're going to go there and we're going to stop it. And they want support. Like, there's people all along this pipeline, all the way impacted. It's not just us. It's super tankers that are threatening the coast, all from, you know, Vancouver all the way down to from Washington, Oregon, and California. All this coast is at risk, and it'll be irreparable. If there's a bitumen spill off a super tanker, it'll be irreparable. If you put one of those super tankers up and down, straight up and down, it'll be higher than the highest high rise in Vancouver. And I don't know what that's equivalent to here, but it's a massive amount that would dump, and it would affect the aquatic life. It'll affect people's real estate. It'll affect people's livelihoods all along the whole coast. It's not something anyone wants to risk.
Connors, what we haven't been able to get into, and we have a very short time left, about 90 seconds, is the violence from the police and from the man camps that you all have been faced with.
Yeah, right now we have a blockade. We have a Secwepemc safe zone for our nation where we're living. And we've been getting death threats. We've actually had men and industry trucks full of men come to our front gate to threaten our lives and actually face off and throw our signs around and threaten to come back and kill us and shoot us with a rifle. Like, this is the type of things. And the trolls online that continue to give the death and rape threats to the indigenous women that are on the front line. It's terrible. And it just shows that this is what this industry perpetuates. And we're going to continue to see this if we let oil and gas into our communities.
Kanahus has been traveling the world with the mission of stopping the tar sands and is here in Oakland this evening at the First Congregational Church of Oakland, 2501 Harrison Street, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Thank you so much for coming in to join us.
Kukshan.
Kanahus Manuel is an Indigenous freedom fighter from the South Central Interior of what's called British Columbia. She's a water protector, birth keeper, and a member of the activist group Tiny House Warriors, and part of the Mobilization Stop Canada's Tar Sands Pipeline.